versus ML Group Holding Company. Yes. Go ahead, Ms. Keller. Uh-huh.
May it please the court? The trial court erred when it dismissed this case for a number of reasons. Today I would like to address two of the primary reasons. First, it failed to recognize the importance of Texas to this litigation, the importance of Texas to special industries, to the defendants, the XAML defendants, and to the Saudi Arabian project. Second, it failed to recognize the significance of V&M Tube's own words, placing V&M Tubes in the state of Texas. Turning to my first point, the court failed to recognize the importance of Texas. Texas, as everyone knows, has a robust oil and gas industry. Part of that industry is the oil country tubular goods business. It's a specific type of piping used in the oil business. This industry had not previously been in Saudi Arabia. Of course, they do have their own oil and gas industry, but there was no plant facility to do this work in Saudi Arabia. My client, Special Industries, conceived of an idea to take this technology in Texas and open a plant in Saudi Arabia. They saw a lack of something there. When they did that, they approached several people, several different companies. XAML was interested. And before XAML would do that, where did XAML travel to learn about the oil country tubular goods business? They traveled to Texas, because Texas was where they were going to learn about this business, where they were going to make the connections that were necessary for the survival and success of their business. Even though it's going to be in Saudi Arabia, it was going to have to rely on these experts here in Texas. Accordingly, the XAML defendants purposefully engaged Special Industries to be their people on the ground in Texas, to communicate with suppliers, to communicate with the engineers, to develop this project for creation and building in Saudi Arabia. Moreover, the XAML defendants, when they engaged Special Industries on the front end, they knew that Special Industries would be there on the back end. When this plant in Saudi Arabia is up and running, Special Industries is going to be in Texas developing the market for their goods. The quality, nature, and extent of the XAML defendants' relationships with Special Industries in Texas is what differentiates this case from the primary cases that the court relied on to dismiss the case.
Well, one of those cases was Moncrief, the Russian project, and it does seem to me that the focus there on the hub of the activities needing to be in Texas is quite relevant here. You're aware of that. I know better than I am. Are you saying that the hub is not really that significant, or that this, in fact, was the hub of the activity that was contracted for?
Your Honor, it is that Texas was, in fact, the hub, and it was significant. In this case, you might look at it, there might be a few hubs. Certainly there is a hub in Saudi Arabia, and that's a construction hub, because that's where the project is. But the work that Special Industries was engaged for is the development of that project. And the hub of that development certainly was in Texas. I would like, I don't want to quote too much, but I would refer the court to one of the letters. It's an email from XAML to Special Industries early on. I believe it was before they entered their first contract. It's in the record at 1663. And in that letter, Fadi Jardali, who works with XAML, wrote to Charles Shirazi, and in the address it says Houston, Texas. They clearly know they're dealing with someone in Houston. And it states that I am soliciting your agreement to continue the development steps and your assistance in communicating with suppliers, premium thread licensors, and other key players. And the record is clear that those suppliers, the premium thread licensors, and those key players were all in Texas. So the hub of Special Industries work on behalf of XAML is certainly Texas.
Well, one of the things that was quoted in the district court's opinion, Moncrief, citing Mississippi Interstate, I forget, Expo or something, a plaintiff's unilateral activities in Texas do not constitute minimum context where the defendant did not perform any of its obligations there. The contract did not require performance in Texas, and the contract is centered outside of Texas. You certainly have something. There certainly is some activity in Texas, but it does seem to me that you're focusing more than the case law allows on this aspect of the contract.
I agree that that is what Moncrief stated, but I believe that that is specific to that case itself, because in Moncrief, if I'm not mistaken, the plaintiff actually opened an office in Saudi Arabia. I believe it was Saudi Arabia as well. They opened an office over there to perform much of their work, and what they were doing, it was a financial transaction, and I think everyone would agree you can find financiers everywhere across the globe, and there was no evidence in that case that Texas was significant to the plaintiff's work in developing the financing for that project. Here, Special Industries is not developing financing. They're actually developing the engineering, the suppliers, and even on the back end, they're going to be developing the market for the project itself, for their products. And so Texas really is significant here. And the court, the Fifth Circuit in Mississippi Interstate versus Transportation, actually did confirm that the defendant is not required to have performed any services or work in the forum state. So I believe Moncrief is specific to the facts of that case, because the other Fifth Circuit authority does confirm that the defendant did not actually have to perform in the forum state.
Well, Mississippi Interstate has the phrase that, as you say, did allow personal jurisdiction in Mississippi, I suppose, that the party purposefully caused business activity foreseeable to the out-of-state defendant to occur in the forum state. But I think all these other cases, in addition perhaps to Mississippi Interstate, is talking about the level and degree of activity. And it seems to me your primary argument is that this kind of oil and gas expertise existed in Texas and Houston, perhaps primarily, and that's a different kind of activity than I see in any of these other cases. It's not where the manufacturing was taking place. It's not where the plant was being built. This is not where the trucks were coming from, as in Mississippi Interstate. And it really is almost an educational, expertise-based activity. What's your best case that qualifies?
Best case?
I mean, it wouldn't necessarily have to be exactly that, but what should we look at that really fits that description?
I think that the court can look at Southwest Offset versus HEDCO and the Command Air case. Those two cases, they don't involve something coming into Texas. It's the product was being, the services were being performed in Texas, and then Southwest Offset going elsewhere. And Southwest Offset is similar in another respect, because the court noted that the Texas plaintiff had initially made the contact with the defendant to do services for the defendant. And I believe that had it been a one-time isolated contract, as in Hydrokinetics, the court might have said that's not sufficient. But in that case, it's the circumstance that we have here. The defendant was happy with the plaintiff's work. And then the defendant continued on with further orders, with further relationships with the plaintiff in Texas. And that is what created that significant activity. And in this case, I believe that the XAML defendants have argued that it was just maybe merely foreseeable that work might happen in Texas, but it was not merely foreseeable. The first contract that the parties executed, I believe I refer to it as the first MOU, expressly provides that Special Industries is going to perform work that involves involving other Texas players. Specifically, the first MOU required that Special Industries was going to develop relationships with Hunting, which is Texas-based, TMSI, which is Texas-based, and Aramco. And everyone understood, and the evidence is in the record, that even though Aramco is somewhat worldwide, Special Industries would be working with the Houston office of Aramco. So in even executing the very first MOU, XAML was directing that Special Industries engage these other Texas entities. And so even though they might not have performed on their side in Texas, what they were asking Special Industries was to do was to engage these other Texas players on their behalf. And so under the case law, they don't have to do their work in Texas. But what they were doing, they knew that in engaging special industries, they were going to be creating a wealth of business in Texas. And not only did special industries do that with respect to the parties specified in the first MOU, they continued to do that at Zammel's request and at Zammel's encouragement, engaging not only Hunting, TMSI, and Aramco, but other Texas parties, QPD, TIEC, Ellison Technologies, National Oil Well Varco, the Lucas Group, and U.S. Steel, all in Texas. And I'd like the court to also focus on two declarations that we submitted with our evidence. It's a declaration of Michael Rafferty and Craig Cave, actually three, and Mr. Charles Tarazzi. They're in the record at 1156 to 62, 1666 to 1672, and 1659 to 60. These three declarations set out significant activities all in Texas and all vital and critical to the success of the project in Saudi Arabia.
Do you want to address the jurisdiction over V&M?
Yes. V&M is very different. In their case, there's a growing body of law coming out of Texas that confirms that this alter ego type of jurisdiction can be extended to a foreign parent company based on their own words. And I know that, Judge Smith, you I think you authored the case, the opinion in Administrators of Tulane. That comes close, but doesn't actually reach the circumstances that we have here. And Judge Smith instructed in a footnote that in a federal jurisdiction, when it's based on diversity, the court is to look at the law of the state. And the law of Texas is very clear that the courts are going to hold the defendants to their own words. In Daimler-Benz, Villa Gomez, Superior Energy, the Texas courts have repeatedly said if the foreign parent is projecting itself as present in the state of Texas, the courts will hold them as present in the state of Texas. The federal district courts sitting in Texas have confirmed that that is a viable basis for asserting jurisdiction over a foreign defendant. And we understand it's a lesser burden. We're not looking for a deep pocket, you know, somewhere in a different country. We're looking for the actor. V&M Tubes is the actor in this case. And V&M Tubes, by its own words, has attempted to ensure to the world, we are where you are. We are in Texas. And we've cited numerous examples of this that I believe go well beyond any other case I've read in terms of the parent company confirming we're there in Texas.
Does there need to be evidence of control over the subsidiaries?
I do believe that there has to be some evidence of interaction between the parent or involvement between the parent and the subsidiary, but I don't think it's controlling because in Daimler-Benz and Villa Gomez, each of those cases have confirmed. We believe that the corporate formalities have been preserved, and they have not found that type of control that's typically required if you want to establish liability on a party for alter ego. Instead, they have looked at this additional factor. It's that plus factor. And I love one of the quotes. I think it's from Velleran versus Bridgestone, a case out of the Western District of Texas. The question is whether the customers readily distinguish between the parent and subsidiary. I believe if you look at these representations by V&M Tubes, they do not want the customers to distinguish between the parent and the subsidiary. They want the customers and everyone to know we are here. And they do know how to distinguish between the parent and these subsidiaries because we've submitted excerpts from numerous magazines that V&M Tubes produces. And when they want to talk about a specific subsidiary, they do. In the record at 811 and 822, they specifically refer to operations of a specific subsidiary. But mostly, they talk about V&M Tubes and says that V&M Tubes works in close collaboration with its sales offices in Houston. We are in partnership with Weatherford. Everyone knows that's a Texas company. They make it clear to everyone, we are there in Texas. And it was important to them to get this transaction from us because this is their supply chain. They created these Texas entities for the purpose of marketing only their products. And in interfering with our contract, they've assured that they're the ones who will do that in Texas.
All right, you've saved time for rebuttal. Thank you, Ms. Did you
want to have a... Any further?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've saved time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Arlen?
Good morning. Brad Ireland here on behalf of Zommel Group Holding and Saudi Seamless. Especially the questions coming from you, Judge Southwick, I think shined a light on the grim reality about the jurisdictional claims made by Special Industries against my clients, Zommel and Saudi Seamless. The jurisdictional argument is dependent on three problematic arguments. One being the fusing of Zommel with Saudi Seamless. Two being morphing Special Industries into a Texas corporation. And three being shifting, as we heard a lot, shifting the focus, the hub of activities from Saudi Arabia, where a $140 million plant was built, to Texas.
Is it your position, I know you put things in order and I'm starting at the end of your list, that there can only be one hub for purposes of our jurisdiction, of our jurisprudence?
Well,
manufacturing hub in Saudi Arabia, an expertise development hub in Texas?
I guess the position I'm taking is that there is no hub in Texas at all. Sure, there's technology that relates to this particular industry and what the plant was doing in Texas, but the only evidence that was proffered by Special Industries that Texas is the hub is this declaration by Michael Rafferty. There was no other documentation, there's no records, no publication, certainly nothing ever stated by Zommel or Saudi Seamless, Saudi Pipes, that we're looking to Texas as the hub of this industry.
Is it even possible to get the materials and skill set you need for this kind of project somewhere besides Texas? I thought the relationship was sought out because it was part of the OCTG market and the industry expertise for this is in Texas. So where else could you possibly get this if it wasn't Texas?
Well, Judge Elrod, I'd suggest to you that the fact that all but $1 million worth of materials that went into this facility came from outside of Texas. That tells you a lot about the fact that, for example, Valerc and Mansman over in France had developed this entire technology as well and had the technology. In fact, we were seeking the threading technology from V&M when those discussions led to the sale of the plant to V&M.
Weren't you seeking it from them from a Texas provider? The threading technology ultimately was with a Texas provider, wasn't it?
No.
It wasn't? No. Okay.
There were some discussion with Hunting about their threading technology.
Right. Hunting's threading tools, the Texas-based company, is the threading that you actually were seeking.
No, that's not correct, Your Honor.
Not correct? Okay. No. Where can I find that in the record?
I apologize. I don't have a record site for the court on that. But V&M had their own threading technology separate apart from Hunting. Hunting was one of many, not many, but several companies that had threading technology. And by the way, most of the discussions that went along with Hunting were with their office in Scotland, not in Texas, not in Houston. So that never materialized. That was one of the multiple contracts that Special Industries has relied on that never came to maturity. So really, the discussion that took place in Paris and also in Saudi Arabia with V&M was with regard to licensing the threading technology from V&M, not from Hunting. It had nothing to do with Hunting.
And so your position is that you could get the materials and skill set necessary for this project all around the world and that Texas was not crucial to this project at all?
Absolutely. And I don't think that's the test anyway, Judge Elrod. That argument is akin to saying that a dispute in India over a Bollywood film production would have to be brought in Los Angeles because the hub of the motion picture industry is in L.A. That makes no sense. The fact is if you pull back one step and look at all the claims, they all relate to the construction and use of the plant in Saudi.
It has to be brought in L.A. The question is L.A. also an appropriate forum? You don't have to say that they have to be brought, that they couldn't be brought in the other country. It's, is it an available forum? It's not an either-or proposition.
And fair enough. And so if you look at the standard, the test, let's look under either general or specific jurisdiction, whether Special Industries has made their case for bringing a lawsuit against Zommel and or Saudi Seamless in Texas. General, I think that under general jurisdiction, I think Johnston versus Multa Data, I think that closes the door to general jurisdiction over the claims against either company. And the reason is because, number one, in Johnston, reiterating the fact that it's extremely difficult to establish general jurisdiction, it's not enough to do business with Texas. The Special Industries had a burden to show that either of my clients did business in Texas. And there simply is no record, no evidence in the record of doing business in Texas under any one of those claims. If you look at specific jurisdiction, just break it down. And by the way, it's my belief that it's impermissible or improper to try to combine the two, Saudi Pipes and Zommel, for purposes of an analysis under specific jurisdiction. And the reason is clear, because there's only one claim against Saudi Pipes. And since, as you, Judge Southwick, and you, Judge Smith, in the Seifert case, pointed out, you have to have a linkage between the claim that's being presented and the contacts with Texas. And so if the claim against SSPF, for example, under the second MOU is Zommel did not pay or we refused to pay a commission on the U.S. Steel purchase order, which was canceled, by the way, then what is the connection with Texas there? The only remote nebulous connection to Texas is the fact that this purchase order was negotiated with an office, a sales office of U.S. Steel, which is not a Texas corporation, and then ultimately it was canceled. That is it. That is the only thing. And we know from Johnston and from Freudenspring, for example, that it's not enough that you contract with Texas. It's not enough that you negotiate with Texas. It's not enough that you pay Texas. You have to have more. You have to do business in Texas.
So you don't think that recruiting people from Texas would ever be enough?
Well, it could be if it was a substantial portion of the connection, the overall connections, the overall business. In the analysis of this case, under the facts of this case, recruiting two people, really, from Texas, not three, that worked for a very brief time in Saudi Arabia with a group that included 88 different contractors all over the world, not enough to, and especially under specific jurisdiction, because none of the claims arise from the employment of those two individuals in Saudi Arabia.
Can you address the general jurisdiction over Zommel with regard to the Huntsman issue?
Certainly. First of all, Zommel never did business in Texas. It never came to Texas to do business. It didn't negotiate a contract. It never executed a contract with Hunting. So,
Huntsman.
Okay, with Huntsman.
I'm talking about the Huntsman contracts that they had.
Sure.
That would be done in Texas.
Perfect.
Zommel, a big contract with Huntsman.
The Huntsman contract is actually with an affiliate of Zommel in Saudi Arabia. It's a co-venture or a joint venture with Huntsman for the production of chemicals in Saudi Arabia. All of the activities in Saudi Arabia. The contract is governed by Saudi Arabian law. It doesn't touch Texas.
So you believe that the Huntsman contract doesn't contemplate that the work would be done in Texas. What about the ConocoPhillips contract?
Same thing. It's for a joint venture for a chemical distribution solely within the Middle East. So all of the production facilities are in Saudi Arabia. The contract was Saudi Arabian. Everything touched Saudi Arabia, not Texas. So again, and by the way, those are affiliates of, that was another affiliate of Zommel. It's not Zommel, and there was no evidence provided in the record that ties these affiliates of Zommel to Zommel. And as the court knows, special industries can't rely solely on contacts of affiliates anyway to establish either specific or general jurisdiction. I'd also point out this to the court, that if you look at the record sites from special industries, they rely heavily on Rafferty's declaration, and there is neither a date nor a signature in the record for the Rafferty declaration, and under 28 U.S.C. 1746, we believe that that is a technical violation, technical failing of the declaration.
All right, thank you, Mr. Ireland. Mr.
Thank you.
Barnard?
May it please the court. My name is Scott Barnard, and I represent the other appellee here today, V&M Holdings, V&M Tubes, a French holding company. What the appellant is trying to do here is jurisdiction by pronoun. What do I mean by that? What they're saying is because V&M Tubes makes references to we or us in some of its own trade publications, that alone should be enough for jurisdiction. But that's just a shorthand way to describe the worldwide scope of strategic business relationships that V&M Tubes has with its subsidiaries. This doesn't come close to the level of control necessary to show general jurisdiction under an alter ego analysis.
But do you have to meet that, or is this, there's this new hybrid approach that you don't actually have to establish alter ego, but you still, if you're involved with your subsidiary, that's enough under Texas law?
This court has made it clear, and Texas law makes it clear, that the mere presence of a parent-subsidiary relationship is not going to be enough. And as you pointed out earlier, Judge Elrod, you asked the question about control. There absolutely has to be control. In the Freudensprung case, this court looked at several different factors, one of which is control. Complete control. And I think that's
saying the Texas cases always require control.
If you look at, for example, the Daimler-Benz case that was cited by the appellant, that case had a very high level of control. In the facts there, the parent was setting the price, the parent was looking at the production numbers, looking at the way that the products were displayed. So you saw a high level of control in that case that you don't see.
Is it unfair to call V&M into court where they have themselves chosen, it's not based upon the other company's efforts, V&M's chosen to have an aggressive marketing campaign that says that it has a high presence in Houston and uses the pronoun. It's chosen to do this to say we are in Texas, we're firmly established in Houston, Texas. They've chosen that themselves. There's not any unfairness in hauling them into court where they've chosen to say that they have a firm, established presence.
I'm glad you raised that, Judge Elrod, because I think there's an issue there. I think what you're referring to is page 31 of the appellant's brief, where there's several different bullet points that talk about V&M's alleged representations. But I think if you look at the record on those, they're very different, and they talk about the subsidiary's involvement.
So whenever V&M says in an online magazine that we are now firmly established in Houston, Texas, they say, through our subsidiary, so-and-so, we are firmly established in Houston, Texas.
So the reference you're making is from page 800 of the record, and what it is it's an interview in a trade magazine with an employee. It doesn't say who the employee works for, but if you look to the right of that article on page 800 of the record, there's a picture of the speaker along with two other people, and it says that they're with V&M USA, a subsidiary two levels removed from V&M Holdings. From V&M Tubes. You have V&M Tubes, a French holding company. You have V&M Holdings, another U.S. holding company, and then you have V&M USA.
So is it your position that your marketing efforts, your clients' marketing efforts, do not try to make a seamless connection between the subsidiaries and the parent and act like it's all one? If I were to thoroughly review every marketing thing that's in the record, it would not make it look like it's V&M that's doing business.
I think that they are trying to boast about their global strategic relationships with their subsidiaries. But I think that V&M has been very careful to explain that the subsidiary is doing the work. The other example on that page from the appellants on page 31 of their brief, they talk about V&M Tubes having a sales office in Houston, and it's on page 789 of the brief. You look at that page, it is a page that has several different subsidiaries on there. And if you look there, yes, there's a sales office, and yes, it says Houston, but directly above it, in bold and in all caps, it says V&M USA. Again, the subsidiary I was talking about that is two levels removed from the appellee in this case. There's a third reference, too, that they have on 801, this third bullet point on this page from their reply brief. It also talks about V&M Tubes having a sales presence, but it's under the header of V&M USA. And so to answer your question, I think that V&M Tubes, yes, they boast about global strategic networks, and that's part of kind of the global economy right now. As you say, we are going to be able to help you where you are. But when you look at the fine print, when you look at the explanations, there is a description or an identification of the subsidiaries that is done purposely to keep the entity separate and to show that there's not the complete control that you have to show under this court standards.
You consider that care in the promotions and the advertising to be central to your position? If it had not been, if we find variations in how clear it is that the we is referring to subsidiaries, what's the state of the law on that? What are we dealing with when some of this promotional material may not be as clear as you're standing there at the podium indicates some examples may be?
I think that it's not a factor that this court has looked at in the past, nor the court should. It's a subjective factor. And when you look at the test that you have from the Freudensprung case, you have objective factors that you go through. There's several different factors that are looked at, and that is not one of them. In fact, on page 59 of the appellant's brief, they go, I find it, you know, they remark that there is no discussion. The discussion is totally absent from the Alpine case, the Freudensprung case, the Hargrave case, about statements by a foreign parent concerning its subsidiary. And the reason it's not in those cases is because it's not one of the elements that this court looks at. The court looks at other elements. The closest one you could have would be the last element, which is this complete control over general policy or complete control over the daily operations. There is absolutely no evidence here of complete control. Making these type of statements to help the consumer understand the global strategic network or global strategic relationships is one thing, but it's not practical to have to draw these lines. And this court hasn't done that in the past. What they've done is looked at the objective factors.
Does the record have say anything one way or the other about the degree of control or non-control?
I would say that the record absolutely shows a high degree, no degree of control, but a degree of separateness and a degree of showing that they are adhering to the corporate formalities. There's an issue here where trademarks are being used, but the trademarks are being done pursuant to agreements. There are shared services agreements, which again are a hallmark of showing a separation between a parent and subsidiary and indicative of the typical parent-subsidiary contract. There are loans in place, and I believe we had loans in the Alpine case, loans that bear interest, and in fact, the record shows have been paid back. These are the types of things you would expect to see between a parent and subsidiary, and they don't show the level of control.
What about the board? The boards or the boards of the subs? I know that there are people on the boards from the parent. Do they have a controlling membership, of some majority control of the board?
So there is some overlapping between the boards, but I believe in the Kelly case, in the Ipsen case, even 100% overlap between the parent subsidiary board, that alone is not going to be enough to show complete control. And even on the fact that we have some overlapping officers and directors, the corporate formalities have been observed.
What would this record show? That it's a controlling interest on the board, or would it show it's a minority interest on the board? What is this record?
It would be a control. I believe the record would be a controlling interest on the board. But what you'll also see on the record on page 226 of the record is that they had separate board meetings. So V&M Tubes is having its board meetings, and then, for example, V&M USA is having a separate board
meeting. They're coming to Texas for these board meetings.
There is some evidence that some of the board meetings may have been held in Texas, but they're being held, again, separately from the party at issue here, which is V&M Tubes. Furthermore, on page 226 of the record, we see that V&M Tubes is not paying for the director service or the officer service of of these people that are on the subsidiaries. The other issue to keep in mind is the whole reason we're having this alter ego analysis is because there are none of the hallmarks of standard jurisdiction here. Again, V&M Tubes is incorporated in France. Its primary office is in Boulogne-Billancourt. And in fact, that's one of the other issues that this court, there are elements that this court looks at, which is, do they have separate headquarters? Here, V&M Tubes headquarters is in Boulogne-Billancourt outside of Paris. The other headquarters are in Houston. They're observing the corporate formalities, as we talked about, and there's not complete control. If you look at page 226 of the record, we had submitted an affidavit from Anastasios Ikonoumou, who explains that the corporate formalities have been followed. Special Industries didn't come back with anything in response. And one of the things that it shows is that the subsidiaries can make decisions without the involvement of the parent. And when that's the case, that again shows a separateness between the parent and the subsidiary and nothing more than a traditional parent-subsidiary relationship. For example, in the Ipsen case, which Judge Smith said on the panel, indirect ownership of a subsidiary stock, common directors and officers, and even control over policy decisions and budget was not enough to find general jurisdiction through an alter ego analysis. The same should be the case here. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Barnard. Ms. Keller, you say time for rebuttal.
May I please support? Briefly regarding the Zammel defendants, I think that it is very clear in the record that when Zammel engaged Special Industries, they were engaging Special Industries as the feet on the ground in Texas to develop this project for them. The affidavit of Michael Rafferty, which they've challenged today, actually that's their first challenge to it, it is in without objection. They have not objected to Mr. Rafferty's declaration in the trial court. But in that declaration, Mr. Rafferty makes it clear that before even entering into contracts with Zammel, they advised Zammel of the work that they would be doing in Texas, the parties that they would be engaging in Texas on behalf of Zammel, the Zammel defendants. It was clear before they contracted with them on the first MOU. In the second MOU, the engagement where they were going to be acquiring the supplies, the raw materials that were necessary for the project. They specifically advised Zammel, we're going to be doing this through Texas providers. We have a short list of approved vendors, all based in Texas. This is what we're going to be doing for you in Texas. It truly is irrelevant, their argument that we, Zammel, did not do work in Texas. Because they did it through Special Industries. And they did it through all the other providers that they engaged on their behalf to transfer this valuable business that truly is headquartered in Texas. I believe V&M Tubes has a statement that Texas is the heart of the OCTG business. They engaged all these people on their behalf. The fact that what ultimately ends up is built in Saudi Arabia, same with the Conoco contract, the Huntsman contract, the fact that everything might end up in Saudi Arabia is not the inquiry. We're not looking at simply where it ends. We have to look at where it begins. And it all begins in Texas. All of the work Special Industries did and everyone else that they engaged on their behalf. The threading technology, I know there was questions about this. There were extensive negotiations in Texas regarding the threading technology. And I believe the record is clear that the threading technology was licensed and sourced through Texas. Not France. If they wanted France's OCTG expertise, they could have engaged V&M Tubes from the beginning, but they didn't. They came to Texas to study it in 1995. They came to Texas again in 2008 and 2009, I believe, again, to visit with the people in Texas. They toured plants and facilities to ensure that they were doing it right, and they needed Texas to do that. On the second MOU, it almost sounded like they were trying to make an argument that because Zammel didn't perform, there's no Texas connection. Because we weren't able to consummate the purchases under the second MOU, that there's no jurisdiction. I don't think someone gets to escape personal jurisdiction because they breached a contract. They entered the contract and the work was done in Texas. Regarding Valarc and Management 2, I have attempted to be very careful in my selection of their quotes from their materials, where it is clear that they are using the name V&M Tubes does this. V&M Tubes is here. V&M Tubes maintains complete control over all of our products from the mill to the customer. And they are replete, the record is replete with them. And the fact that they have referred to a V&M Tubes sales office in Houston is significant. The Texas courts look at that. How do they talk about these subsidiaries? The fact that they might identify that subsidiary by name somewhere else with a photograph or in a chart doesn't change the fact that they want everyone in Texas to know when you buy from us in our Houston sales office, you have V&M Tubes right here with you.
Do you accept the accuracy of what opposing counsel said? It's not somewhere else buried in the back pages. It's on the same page indicating who the sub is. Is that a proper characterization of the evidence you're talking about?
I'm not certain. I'm not certain if, you know, it's, I'm certain that it's not for all of them. There might be a few. But the fact that in the body of their text, they're using their name and this is us and this is where we are, that's what's important. And the site escapes me, but I believe that there's one of the cases that we have cited that actually looks at that. Even if somewhere else they're identifying it as a subsidiary, they're characterizing it as themselves and their division, and that's what's key.
All right, thank you, Ms. Keller. Your case is under submission.